right now, we don't see any indication that the North Koreans are willing to enter into such a serious discussion with us.
The U.S. Secretary of State heads to Asia as North Korea looms. It's Friday, August 4th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You can find us, too, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a member of Congress weighs in on North Korea, a U.S. sailor missing at sea, halal becoming big in China, genetic engineering yeast, 700 years in the future, in the movies, that is. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is returning to Asia with stops in the Philippines, Malaysia, and Thailand, including a session of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations in Manila. He hopes to advance efforts to isolate North Korea over the growing threat posed by its nuclear and missile programs. Susan Thornton, acting Secretary of State for East Asia and Pacific Affairs, spoke with reporters during a telephone conference.
Basically, what we're trying to do is galvanize this pressure and isolate North Korea so that it can see what the opportunity cost is of developing these weapons programs. And that, we hope, will have the effect of bringing the regime in Pyongyang to the realization that they're just not worth keeping and that they would enter into a serious discussion with the international community about how to abandon, what the process would be for giving up those weapons, and what could they expect to gain from that decision. So that is very much what we hope to see unfold in the future. As of right now, we don't see any indication that the North Koreans are willing to enter into such a serious discussion with us.
However, even though North Korea's foreign minister will be on hand, she does not expect Tillerson to meet with him, although he may meet with his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi. Thornton said that she hopes the ASEAN Regional Forum, of which Pyongyang is a member, will consider suspending the North. Malcolm Cook, a senior fellow at the Singapore-based Institute for Southeast Asian Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty that he doubts Tillerson will achieve any breakthrough announcements on isolating the North.
The United States certainly encouraged ASEAN, the regional grouping, to not invite the North Korean foreign minister to this year's meeting in line with the U.S. policy you just outlined. But the North Korean foreign minister will be there at the same table as Secretary of State Tillerson. So I think he's going to find it hard going.
Will this be an opportunity for the U.S. to engage in some sort of dialogue?
Even the North Korean foreign minister has already visited the Philippines, who's hosting it, and has announced he'll be there. I think it's highly unlikely that Secretary Tillerson would have a meeting with the North Korean foreign minister, because if that ever came out, I'm sure it would make a big news story. But there is some scope for lower-level contact between the United States and North Korean delegations if the U.S. decides that's a good idea. I'm sure the North Koreans would welcome it.
Well, Malcolm, is there any concern that the U.S. has that members of ASEAN are not enforcing sanctions passed by the Security Council against North Korea?
I think China is the one they focus most of that on, but it's very clear that some Southeast Asian countries and ASEAN members have long-standing and close relations with North Korea, particularly Cambodia and Laos, and so far they have made no visible signs to reduce those. Vietnam also has close historical ties with North Korea, but they have, in step with the U.S. encouragement, limited those ties recently. But Cambodia and Laos have shown no signs.
Malcolm, this comes at a time that the Trump administration reportedly is preparing new trade measures to force China to crack down on intellectual property theft and other matters. Is this a way for the U.S. to take aim at China for its support of North Korea?
Acting Undersecretary of State for East Asia, Susan Thornton, was asked this question about overlaps between China's position on North Korea, which the United States and particularly the president have become increasingly critical of, and U.S. trade measures. And she certainly argued that there was no connection between the two. I think the U.S.-China trade problems have been going on for a long time and were a major focus of President Trump's election campaign. So I think the trade frictions and possible U.S. trade remedies would have happened regardless of North Korea.
Malcolm Cook expects ASEAN members and China to agree to a framework on a code of conduct regarding maritime disputes in the South China Sea. This comes 15 years after agreeing to a declaration. However, he does not see approval of a legally binding code of conduct anytime soon. Susan Thornton said the United States welcomes such a framework and has called for rapid adoption of an effective code of conduct. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on voanews.com. Floods in Thailand leave 23 dead, $300 million in losses. New bloodshed in troubled India-controlled Kashmir. Father of Afghan girls robotics team leader killed in suicide attack. China joins search for missing U.S. sailor. Germany claims Vietnam kidnapped asylum seeker wanted by Hanoi. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, we invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. As the United States and other nations in East Asia continue to search for solutions to escalating threats from North Korea, Republican Congressman Bradley Byrne from Alabama, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, has recently returned from South Korea and Japan. He spoke with VOA Mandarin reporter Piggy Chung about the North Korean crisis, which he says is dangerous for South Korea, Japan, and now posing a direct threat to U.S. interests.
We went to the DMC. We spoke with the Minister of Defense for South Korea. We spoke with our commander over there, who is also the commander of Korean troops. That's the way that works. We had some very intense discussions about where we are and where we're heading. Clearly, this is a very dangerous situation for the South Koreans. It's a very dangerous situation for the Japanese. But with the increase in missile technology that we're seeing from the North Koreans, it is posing a threat to United States interests, Guam, perhaps Hawaii, perhaps even the west coast of the United States. So the entire world is being brought into this as a result of the activities of the North Korean government. And it is just not acceptable to any of us that they have intercontinental ballistic technology or that they have nuclear missile technology, because the nuclear missiles could be on short-range missiles and certainly threaten South Korea and Japan.
Of course, this past week, North Korea just conducted another test, which is, analysts says, that is the most successful yet.
Yeah.
What do you think about this development, and what do you hope China would do regarding this crisis?
80% of the trade that North Korea has is with China. So China can have an enormous impact on the behavior of the North Korean government. And I would hope that we would continue our efforts, and I believe we will, to push China to do more there, because they're not doing nearly enough. Now, China has a big interest here. I know North Korea is right on their border, and they have some concerns about destabilization and refugee flows, et cetera. But they also have a huge interest in making sure that a North Korean misstep doesn't end up in our having a major war on the Asian continent. So they're a superpower now, and they're trying to exercise the prerogatives of a superpower. There's also responsibilities, and they have a responsibility to use that trade relationship to get the North Koreans to change their missile and their nuclear behavior.
Our thanks to VOA Mandarin reporter Peggy Chong and to Congressman Bradley Byrne for speaking with VOA. Happening now in Asia, Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says a plot to bring down a jetliner has been disrupted and contained. Security measures were heightened at all of Australia's major airports after four men were arrested in raids in Sydney last Saturday after authorities received what it called a credible threat. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for listening. Chinese and U.S. naval ships are working together in the South China Sea. They're in a search and rescue mission for a missing American sailor, the military said in a statement on Thursday. A sailor whose name is being withheld was reported missing from the USS Stethem destroyer around 9 a.m. local time on Tuesday. The ship was conducting routine operations in the South China Sea at the time, according to the Navy statement. The Chinese Navy says it's joining American and Japanese search and rescue efforts in the spirit of humanitarianism. This is the Navy's second effort to find a missing sailor in the Asia-Pacific region within the last 2 months. In June, a sailor on the guided missile cruiser USS Silo was reported missing off of Okinawa, and a 50-hour search ensued. The sailor was discovered days later, hiding in one of the ship's engineering spaces. Beijing claims most of the South China Sea, despite overlapping the territorial claims of several other nations, and it objects to any U.S. naval operations in the area. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia. In a rare move, Pakistan's military chief condemned as terrorism a Taliban attack in neighboring Afghanistan, in which 2 U.S. troops were killed, 4 others wounded. The denunciation came as the U.S. Special Envoy for the region, Alice Wells, began a 2-day official visit to Islamabad. Big stories and great features to share with your friends are on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, in the midst of the European refugee crisis and terrorist attacks carried out by Islamist groups, Chinese internet users are gravitating toward a new hashtag, halalization, or making things comply with Islamic dietary laws. Not only is the word trending on Weibo, the most popular microblog service in China, but the vow by senior government officials to contain the trend and alleged spread of all things halal. On Weibo, people posted videos and images as proofs of the perceived halalization creeping into their everyday life. Among them, a Daikos fast food restaurant in Shandong province expelled 2 construction workers for nibbling pig's feet, a highway service area in Hebei province catered only halal food, and universities set up halal dining halls that excluded non-Muslim students. Online users who posted under the hashtag mostly bashed what they see as a religious outgrowth that tramples on secular sensibilities of most Han Chinese. Dr. Haiyan Ma, an assistant professor at Frostburg State University in Maryland, researches relations between Muslims and Han Chinese in China. He said the whole controversy surrounding halalization arose from a mix of political events and social ignorance.
Muslims, you know, have eaten all halal food throughout history. So one of the key reasons actually is Xinjiang. There are some scholars visiting the United States last year, and we met some scholars from Xinjiang, and we asked them why some officials, some so-called lecturers in China, especially some atheist scholars, began to target Muslims in Yinchuan, in Gansu. They were very frank. They said because of Xinjiang problem, when Xinjiang authorities said they are fighting against the terrorism, extremism, fundamentalism, but why you guys have all this kind of halal, you know, trade, halal factories, even halal exhibition, which basically say, you can imagine if you have all this halal trade, for example, the invited Muslim countries, all these traders to come to all this region, then Xinjiang starts the basic complaint. The reason why they cannot defeat extremism in Xinjiang is because you really have kind of larger context in interior region, where people have enjoyed halal food, enjoyed religious freedom. So that's why I would say this is extension of Xinjiang problem into interior region. But of course, they do not express in Xinjiang term. They always said, you know, halal something.
Do you think it's true that food and ingredients typically not associated with halal, like salt, rice, water, are being branded halal as Chinese media have reported? Is that true?
Well, I would say that's partially true. Because if you look at some, you know, Muslim companies, you do have some stuff like a halal rice, halal even tissue. So that's kind of really, I would say, too commercialization of religious marker. Especially if you notice in some company in like Ningxia and Gansu, they try to, you know, make everything so-called halal, but it's not actually like a rice paper. So that's a kind of phenomenon. It really exists.
I want to talk about those posts you see on Weibo. They were saying that they are beginning to see halal checkout counters in supermarkets, halal restrooms, halal hospital wards where they treat patients. Do you think that's legitimate, that what they're saying, and what's going on there?
That's actually really reflect the Chinese high ignorance about halal. They, you know, accuse halal restroom. It's not really nothing to do with halal. When Muslim pray, you have to wash your body, right? So that's why they pay some special utensil. They put some pot, for example, in the restroom where Muslim can clean your body. So that's why Chinese really have no knowledge. They say, okay, this is Islamic law. This is a halal, you know, restroom. How can you halal restroom? Because restroom cannot be eaten, right? So in a Western hotel, they put Bibles there. Now, can you see that Christian hotel? Can you call that, you know, Christianization of society?
What does this halal debate reflect in China today?
Well, several issues. The first is the economic competition between Chinese Muslim and Han Chinese. I mean, if you look at, you know, all this Hui restaurant, I think in the past 20 years, you know, every city you have a Hui restaurant. That's really, you know, imposed challenge to local Han food industries. The second, as I said, really reflect the influence of Xinjiang issue domestically and internationally. As I mentioned, we met professors from Xinjiang. They claim openly because of Xinjiang issue, they want the interior government control Islam, try to control halal products. That's basically to serve for Xinjiang cause.
How do you think the Communist Party has responded to this social phenomenon, and how successful has the party responded?
I think for the Chinese Communist Party, it's really ambiguous. And the one reason, of course, they want to prevent all kinds of religious influence. For example, Christianity. They try to, you know, control Christianity. Now, of course, they want to control, you know, Islam in Northwest. And also, of course, they actually control Judaism in Kaifeng. They try to, you know, cut off the tie between all this Jewish community in Kaifeng and Israel.
Dr. Haiyun Ma, professor on Muslims in China at Frostburg State University, speaking with VOA's Harry Chen. He estimates there are 25 million Muslims in China today, which is less than 2% of its total population. Developing at this hour in Asia, Myanmar's government continues to appeal for calm as the death toll from an outbreak of swine flu or H1N1 influenza has risen to 13 since the first cases were reported last month. Officials say the strain of the virus, part of a global pandemic in 2009, is now considered a normal seasonal flu. Make VOA Asia Facebook your online destination to visit each day. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, by the end of this year, scientists may be able to create a fully artificial genome of common yeast. This rapid development of genetic engineering may someday lead to the creation of a much more complex organisms, and perhaps even humans. VOA's George Pudic says scientists say they are fully aware of the risks, but also the enormous potential benefits.
For about 4,000 years, humans have been using yeast for making bread and alcoholic beverages, many not realizing that it is a living organism. Much like human cells, yeast cells have chromosomes with long strings of DNA containing all the information needed for growth and reproduction. Modern technology allows scientists to cut and paste the four nucleobases comprising the DNA, commonly known as ACGNT. But in their experiments with yeast at New York University's Buke lab, scientists took a different approach.
Rather than starting with what exists in nature and making changes to see what happens, we can do this bottom-up approach where we design whole systems from scratch and see if they work as we predict.
With the help of a computer, chunks of a DNA string that contain a certain sequence, for instance TAG, are cut and replaced with an artificially created sequence, for instance TAA. So far, scientists have created and replaced six of yeast's 16 chromosomes, and they all worked fine. Researchers say they are fully aware of the ethical questions arising from experiments with DNA, and they are ready to talk.
And that involves talking to ethicists, policymakers, regulators, scientists, the general public. I want my mom to be okay with this.
But other researchers experimenting with DNA are eagerly awaiting results.
I paid very careful attention to when they say, here are the lessons learned. Because if they can't do it in a simple thing like yeast, I will never be able to do it in a plant.
The final goal is creation of a synthetic yeast that could be more suitable for the manufacture of drugs or fuel. Other researchers say genetic engineering may lead to growing plants that can detect air pollution and even the presence of explosives. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
As we get ready for the weekend, perhaps a movie is in your plans. There's a new film from French director Luc Besson, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, in theaters now. And as VOA Asia's David Byrd tells us, this futuristic sci-fi film marries overwhelming visuals and strong acting from its female lead to transport viewers to a distant galaxy.
It's the 28th century, and Major Valerian, played by Dane DeHaan, and Laureline, his partner, played by Cara Delevingne, are special operatives hoping to save the city Alpha from a mysterious dark force that aims to destroy it and the universe. Alpha is a city made up of a thousand planets where alien species and humans have all learned to work together for everyone's benefit.
Welcome to Alpha. The city of a thousand planets, where for hundreds of years, every species has shared their knowledge and their intelligence with each other. It's paradise.
The film is based on a 1967 French comic series, Valerian and Laureline, which a young Luc Besson devoured as a child. Besson, who directed 2014's Lucy and another futuristic space opera, The Fifth Element, said he had to quiet his younger self to direct this movie.
Even if this child bring you there, now it's a new deal. You're not 10 years old anymore. you have experience in life. You have to reorganize your way of thinking and your way of working. So I just hope that this little 10 years old boy is just proud of the film.
Dane DeHaan says that he shared Besson's enthusiasm for the story and was amazed to get the part of Major Valerian.
We were eating some eggs, and he was like, "Hey, I'm making the movie I've wanted to make my entire life, and I want you to star in it." And it was so, it was so overwhelming and kind of like surreal. I didn't even really understand what was happening. And he sent me the script 2 hours later. And I read it, and I called him, and I was like, "I love this." And I remember him saying, like, "Oh, I'm so happy, I'm so happy."
British fashion model Cara Delevingne says that working with Besson was both overwhelming and amazing as an actor.
It's completely overwhelming, but at the same time, when you're working with Luc, who's wanted to do this project since he was a kid, he knows every character, every situation, every environment so well that when he describes it, it's almost like you're there. So he was like the best tour guide of, you know, Alpha and the universe as anyone could have.
Besson says that his exhaustive knowledge of the storylines helped him take the actors to places that they could only imagine because the environments were inserted later in post-production.
It's more like the actors goes for a journey to the unknown, and I am Google Earth. So they can refer to me, should I take right or should I take left?
You should take left.
You know, I'm just like, it's not, I'm the reference in a way. I am like, they want to write a letter and I am the dictionary.
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets also stars Clive Owen as General Aaron Fillet, Valerian and Laureline's commanding officer. Musician Herbie Hancock stars as Alpha's defense minister, while singer Rihanna plays Bubble, a shape-shifting, exotic entertainer. And John Goodman lends his voice to Egon Cyrus, a Jabba the Hutt kind of intergalactic gangster. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets is rated PG-13 for sci-fi violence and action, and suggestive material with some brief language. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Now, there's something you don't see often, jazz great Herbie Hancock in a movie. That's worth going to see. We'd like to say hello to everybody listening via VOA Facebook, Burmese in Myanmar, We know you're out there. We know you're listening to us. We thank you for joining us today. We hope you have a great weekend coming up. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Carl Starling, managing editor, Diane Gao, David Bird, and Ali Ogden on our VOA Asia team. Also our interns contributing to our material, Harry Chen, Vivi Ren, and Sana Ali. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.